keep this frequency clear.
But guess what? You don't get to tell me when I can stop speaking. Well,
tune in to Queering the Air.
Report on trans and intersex issues with accuracy, dignity, and respect.
Podcast edition, and therefore, sorry, no music.
Change the narrative rather than combat the narrative.
I know who I am. Took me 20 years to get here. I'm not going to let some idiot senator destroy that.
3CR Community Radio.
Our stories are best told when we are the ones telling them. It helps combat the perpetuation of stereotypes, misinformation, and lies.
I discovered in the face of overwhelming prejudice and persecution an incredible strength through being fiercely fabulous.
Welcome to Queering the Air, Sundays from 3 to 4 on 3CR. 3CR is proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Yes, welcome one, welcome all. And as it's true what they say in politics, if you leave a power vacuum, someone will fill it. So I came in, realised that there was a power vacuum between 2:45 and 3 p.m. and I thought I will fill it with queer music. And the last track that I played before I continued with the Queering the Air show, which is the show you're listening to right now, was Jackie Shane's Any Other Way. Jackie Shane, the absolutely legendary trans artist who performed no less in the late 50s and early 60s, openly trans. So anyway, we've featured them on the show quite a few times. Now, without further ado, because it's quite a crammed show today, we will start with our usual segment. And unfortunately, I don't have my usual crew with me. The Lurgy has got them all. So I was going to have Atlas with me, but Atlas is down with the Lurgy and doesn't even have a voice at this stage. Not great for radio if you don't even have a voice anymore. And but we were going to have Remy from the Trans Creator Radio joined us instead, just as a bit of a favour, you know, to fill the gap, the big shoes that Atlas fills. And then lo and behold, they've been sick with the Lurgy as well and got a massive migraine. So it's just the way it goes, I suppose, on these winter weeks. So let's get, with no further ado, or by my little lonesome, I'll survive. Meow 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 meow.
Meow 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 meow.
Meow 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 meow.
Meow 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 meow.
Yes, meow, 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 meow. I only have time for do it once. You know I like to do it twice. So I'm asking people to, if there's someone with a who identifies as a queer person with disability, to try something new that assuming that you haven't been before. I certainly wasn't aware of this until today. It'll become clearer further on throughout the show how I became aware of it. But the Inclusive Rainbow Voices, they have a monthly community cafe. So every month they hold a space for LGBTIQA plus people with disability to come together and discuss what's important to them. It's online and supported by their experience facilitator, Opal, and everyone is welcome. So if that interests you, my understanding it's on Wednesday nights. That's not here on the website, but I recall hearing that at something I attended today that was held by Inclusive Rainbow Voices. So it's Wednesday nights. And if you're interested, please email hello@irv.org.au to join in. So I know I'll be joining in. I don't go on about it that much, but, you know, I am somebody with disability. Severe enough to need support, and I need support funded by the NDIS, which has its own tales to tell. But I think anyone who's queer and on the NDIS already has some idea what flavour those tales might have to them. Yeah, so I'm just glad to hear that there is a space for people who share that intersectionality. And I think I will be attending it myself. Now, next week's NAIDOC week. And Victoria, there's going to be the Victorian NAIDOC Pride Gala that's held at the Fitzroy Town Hall on Saturday, the 12th of July, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. So for over two decades, the Koori LGBTIQA plus community has been organising nights throughout Victoria and for NAIDOC Week to celebrate their blackness and beauty. So this is something for Rainbow Mob, and where they'll be celebrating the power and achievements of their LGBTIQIA plus ancestors and elders, celebrating pride, power and cultural strength, and to right. The ticket price will include food, drinks and a powerful performance, including live music and DJs. And there is a sensory-friendly space that will be made available. The event is 18 plus only. And if I click on the get tickets, it's $60 for Black Pride VIP, and First Nations people, it's $70, and for allies, it's $100. So it's going to be quite the night, though. So, yes, for the Victorian NAIDOC Pride Gala. Now, the next item on the agenda is that I only discovered recently that there are free massage services offered to transgender, diverse and non-binary persons through the Affirmation Station, which, of course, is part of the range of services that are provided by Transgender Victoria. So, basically, if you call up and make inquiries with the Affirmation Station, which is at Brunswick, East Victoria, Australia. Transgender, diverse and non-binary people can be can benefit from what's referred to as somatic bodywork. So you'll be on a massage table. You will be unclothed, but you're covered with a towel or linen. So then you have this opportunity to share a certain intention for the session. So it's not just massaging. It's also mindfulness, a meditative practice at the same time, which sounds rather interesting. Both body and mind holistically being assisted. So if you basically need to book for a session, that would be through the Humanitics website of the Affirmation Station. Okie dokes, next on the agenda is the Art Club with Talisa. So the Art Club happens weekly, and so it's the next one will be on Tuesday, the 1st of July, 5 p.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, that is at the Affirmation Station. So basically, again, this is an event for transgender, diverse and non-binary people, their family and friends. What to expect? Well, it's basically a weekly drop-in art class, but it's free of charge. So what that means is I think you have to, do you have to? No, in this particular case, you don't have to make a deposit. Some of the Affirmation Station stuff, you make a deposit and then they reimburse you straight away if you attend. It's just a way of making sure that people don't book and then don't show. But that doesn't actually apply to this one. So I've been to one of these and Talisa is just great. Just open-ended, thoughtful, mindful in her practice and informed in her practice with regards to things like inclusivity, responding to trauma, etc. So she's a trauma-informed person, practitioner as well. And in terms of her own creativity, she's a queer writer, artist and visual art educator. It happens also to be in their final year of a master's in therapeutic arts practice. So, you know, we're talking about somebody who knows their stuff. So this has been
meow 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 meow
meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow
meow meow meow meow meow meow. Yes, that's exactly what it has been. So, I went to the Thorn Harbour Country Morning Cuppa on Tuesday. I want to say Tuesday. It might have been Wednesday. It was Wednesday. So I had a discussion with Zara, who is the organiser from Thorn Harbour Country of said morning cuppa. And I also spoke with a lovely queer woman who came down from Shepparton to Bendigo, actually. Came to Bendigo from Shepparton to participate. And so in part, this discussion will also talk about the experience of how rural queer people are attending each other's functions and the type of cultural and community exchange that happens as a result. So without further ado, let's hear from the lovely Zara.
I'm with Zara, and we're here to chat a bit about the joys and tribulations of coordinating this wonderful event, the Thorn Harbour Country Morning Cuppa at Bendigo. So, welcome, Zara.
Thanks, Madison. Great to be here. Thanks for coming along to our event today.
Oh, it was just great. Well worth the trip. Well worth the trip. So, how long has this event been happening for?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say that I was pretty quick to get on the ball when I started at Thorn Harbour to have an event like this.
Yes.
Because I know the value of bringing people together in such a informal but valuable way. So people can just come without any expectations of having to learn something or having to put themselves in a position of somewhat exhaustion when you're being a participant in something.
Yes.
And the community hub that we've set up here is about coming in and relaxing and just feeling grounded.
Yes.
And so the social group was all about that. So yes. It's probably a couple of years that we've been running these now, each month. And we have people coming from all across the northern region. We've had somebody come up from Gippsland. People are traveling, which is beautiful to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I've also noticed that part of the structure of the event is to share information about what's happening in the local region. So I was wondering if you could expand on that.
Yeah, I do feel a little guilty when I interrupt conversation. So midway through our group, everybody is deep in conversation. But it is a great opportunity to connect people into the things that are happening within the region from Thorn Harbour, but also from other stakeholders. So we often have guest speakers coming along and talking about things that are happening within their organisation that are specific to the LGBTI people or people living with HIV that might be attending our event.
Yes.
And they get to not only meet the people who are running those programs, but also it invites people into our space. So we have allies that are working in other organisations come in and hang out in our space with us.
Yes.
And they get to hear about what sort of language we're using and the queer culture and the experiences that we have, which they wouldn't normally have even through their allyship. So it just opens another opportunity of connection.
Yes. What part of what also strikes me as a trans and gender diverse person, there is often not much knowledge or familiarity within the wider LGBTIQA plus spectrum of trans experience. But it seems to me that a gathering of this kind is actually helping with cross rainbow knowledge and understanding of trans experience also.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's no expectations when people come here.
Yeah.
They know that we invite and welcome all people that are part of the LGBTI community, but we also welcome friends and we welcome allies. So people are coming along and not being surprised.
Yes.
When they come across somebody who might be presenting less binary gendered than they used to in the broader world.
Yes.
Because they know that trans people are very welcome here.
And that would seem to me to be, symptomatic of this, almost like a cross-cultural exchange.
Well, I'd hope so, and I hope that from the start, we did our best to be inclusive of all people, and the language that we use and the promotions that we have, like promoting events that are coming up and things like that, are for the whole community. So I'm glad to hear that that's the take that you've noticed.
Yes.
And I encourage that in as many spaces as we can create, because we are a very broad spectrum of people, whether we're LGBT or not, just humans. The human experience is quite broad, and I think that the more we open ourselves to difference, the better off we are as a community.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. What experiences do you think might differ between, say, a queer hub in Bendigo and a queer hub, say, in the Big Smoke?
Well, I guess I find that hard to compare that, because I am very regional centric.
Yeah.
When I go down to metro spaces, it feels big to me.
Yes.
And there is a lot more people at the events that I've been to.
Sure.
And so for my comfort level, I like this. This is the sort of size and the space that works for me.
Yes.
And maybe that's the difference, that it's about the size and number of attendees.
But yeah, so you're saying to me offline that typical attendance is around 15?
15 to 20, yeah. I mean, today we had close to 30 people throughout the time, which was a good,
quite a turnout.
Yeah. Yeah, but it gets noisy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I quite, you know, there's benefits to both. I love seeing everybody, but I also love the quiet gatherings where, you know, you can have those conversations as a group rather than individual conversations happening around the room.
Yes.
And pros and cons to both.
Yes.
And I'm certainly not qualified to say, you know, the difference between metro and regional.
Yeah.
But that's it's certainly the work that I've been doing in Bendigo compared to, say, going even further out into the regions where we have smaller attendance again.
Yes.
It does slightly change the way people connect. And it's a bit more of that, you know, more intimate, personal conversations as opposed to group discussions.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can certainly see how that dynamic would shift with the size. Yeah. What challenges are there for someone who tries to, even successfully, as I believe you have, tries to arrange a gathering of this kind?
The thing that's worked for me is consistency.
Right.
So even if you don't get very many people for a number of months or events, continue doing it at the same time, so that people get to know this is when it's on.
Yes.
And there's, you know, there's value in having different events at different times of the day, because it works different for people's needs and responsibilities. But if you have an event monthly at a one specific time at one specific location, people get to know that's when it is, that's where it is, and people will come at different times, but the conversation is easier shared with people when it's consistent like that.
So
word of mouth gets out there, and although we do the best that we can to promote through newsletters, through social media, and through other streams that we have access to, word of mouth is the best way of sharing a community event, from my experience.
So if somebody wanted to be more involved with Thorn Harbour Country generally, and also perhaps with these morning cuppers, what should they do?
Well, our socials on Facebook, we share all our events on there. You can call our office 4400 9000 and have a chat. You can subscribe to our newsletter, or you can look on the website.
Thank you very much for your time, Zara.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Piani. She, her.
So, how long have you been coming to the Morning Cuppers?
This is my second one.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, how are you finding it?
I love it. Yeah. I love, you know, the drive over from Shepparton and
Yes.
You know, meeting new people. Seeing the people that I don't see very often,
and
catching up, yes.
Well, I drove there here from St Kilda.
Yeah.
And you know what? I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. The two-hour drive's part of the experience.
It is.
Like driving towards and looking forward to it.
Yeah.
What would you say is the key thing you get from gatherings like this?
People sharing their stories.
Yeah.
So learning new things and about people's experiences and information about what's out there.
Yes.
You know, and the visibility.
As in being visible yourself?
Yeah. So, and because there's a lot of events on in Victoria, and eventually you'll bump into people that you've met at these places, and
yeah, that's wonderful. So this sort of becomes a bit of a hub where you meet people who you then sort of see elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't actually thought about it that way.
Yeah, I go to the Better Together conference as well.
Oh yes.
Every year, and I've met some amazing people through that.
Yes.
And I get to bump into them every now and then as well. Yeah, and it's always like safe.
Yeah.
I always feel safe in these groups. That's a good thing for me. Safe and I have fun and, you know, just meet wonderful people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What sort of community do you have in Shepparton?
Well, we have GV Pride, who has just celebrated 20 years
indeed
of GV Pride. We had a Emerald Ball. So we have a little hub, community hub. Yeah. It's only tiny, but it's slowly, you know, getting there, and, you know,
sometimes the tiniest is the best.
There's a lot of events in Shepparton, plus our Out in the Open.
Yes, well, as you know, I was at the Out in the Open.
Yeah, it was great.
I particularly loved that carnival atmosphere.
Oh, it was, isn't it? It's the best day.
It really is.
It really is the best day.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
So you're someone from Shepparton coming over to Bendigo for this event.
Do you
find in Shepparton people come from out and about across Victoria to the Shepparton hub?
The
GV hub?
We do have a lot of people come to events from other areas,
Yeah,
and I think we're slowly connecting with the other communities. But, I mean, we have someone come from Mansfield for a lot of our events. You know, there's just, we've got a Chuka up the road.
Yes.
We had a group go there for coffee last week, I think it was, And, yeah, so I think, you know, Victoria is slowly, we're all starting to come together and in these regional areas.
Yes.
And it's really important.
Yeah. I can feel that, you know. I think that you could sense that. We were looking at each other at one point.
Yes.
And I can say, this person knows what I'm talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
It is starting to gel, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah. And I think it's a great thing to be a part of.
Yes.
And we have a lot of young people in Shepparton.
Yeah.
And I've slowly got to know a lot of them. And, you know, I learned a lot from them. And they learn from me, and I've got some really great, you know, bonding there with some of the young people, and to me that's really special. Yeah, and they're so brave.
Oh, tell me about it. It's astounding.
They're so brave, considering, you know, from our era.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't come out till I was in my 40s, so
same. 47 for me.
Oh, it's 44. Yeah. So. And yeah, they need love, they need acceptance, but they are living life and just being themselves, and it's so great to watch.
Yes, when I was at the Shepparton Out in the Open, it struck me the gathering, the groups of young queer, including gender queer kids.
There's a lot, yeah, and they're living their life and they're doing them, you know.
Yes.
And I'm constantly telling my grandchildren, you be you, don't worry about what else other people think or anything. You just be you, always. And that's what I'm loving, seeing the kids being themselves.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
So, yeah, out there in Bendigo, gathering and community in the name of queer solidarity, without making too much of a fuss about it, just getting on with it. And yeah, I found it really interesting, that discussion about the extent to which, from the viewpoint of participants, and the sentiment was repeated by many others who did not wish to be recorded, you know, we've got to respect that, don't we, but did wish to share with me one-on-one, you know, the great thing about trans-regional, if you will, trans-regional gatherings that are starting to happen. So this morning, no less, I was actually at an event that was held by Inclusive Rainbow Voices, and they invited us to celebrate LGBTIQA plus Disability Pride. I thought that was a worthwhile invitation, so I proceeded to get myself the ticket. And I'm glad I showed up. There was a wonderful panel that was facilitated by Opal. Opal is a person who facilitates the community gatherings that happen once a month by Inclusive Radio Rainbow Voices that I just promoted about 15, 20 minutes ago. Jax Brown, who is known and is a friend of the show, great trans disability advocate, was also on the panel, as was William Ward Bose, who I'm not sure if I'd met before, but very charming, and had a lot to offer in terms of insights to the challenges that are faced in terms of gaining attention from policy decision makers and the various ins and outs of frameworks and government frameworks and how they get in the way of particularly intersectional queer people being able to channel the necessary funds to where they need to be and necessary efforts to where they need to be. And there was also Catherine Marshall, who is the CEO for Inclusive Rainbow Voices, who also had quite a few insights from their perspective around the strugglings of funding and of advocacy. So we will very, very likely be playing excerpts of the recordings for that particular event in a future episode, perhaps even next week. So I'm in conversations with them about that. It will certainly happen. It's just a question of logistics, and so therefore a question of exactly when. But in the meantime, I interviewed Jax, couldn't resist, and also interviewed another person who I know quite well, who is dear to my heart, Sky. And they were both, Jax was, as I say, one of the panel members, and Sky was a participant, that is to say, an audience member. And it's funny, I always want to ask a question, you know, at these things, and, you know, I kept putting my hand up, but no one ever gave me the microphone, and, you know, got a little bit miffed at the end because I realised it was going to be the last question, and I didn't get an opportunity. But then I realised it was Sky who got the last opportunity, and I thought, well, that's great, actually. You know, if anyone's going to get the opportunity other than myself, well, Sky is definitely a perfect candidate. So anyway, my ego aside, let's hear from Jax and their reflections on the event. You're with 3CR, I'm Madison Moffat, and I'm with the wonderful Jax Brown, a very solid, informed, trans persons with disability advocate within our community. Welcome, Jax.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you, Madison. I kind of alternate between using the term advocate, which is, kind of sounds middle of the road and,
yes,
and somewhat professional, with activist, which,
yes,
I used in preference for advocate for a long time, because for me that's more about screaming from the sidelines to the centre about what needs to change and you know, not necessarily having to try and speak the language of government or even speak to government, but,
yeah,
be able to be on the streets kind of doing some of that grassroots protest movement stuff.
Absolutely. Which one did I use?
You used Advocate, which I do embrace these days as I you know, embrace middle-agedness. And I feel like I'm getting a bit less fiery in some of my approaches. But for a long time, I was a staunch activist as opposed to Advocate.
Yeah. But it's funny. But it's not very radical radio of me, is it, to use the term Advocate?
Well, yeah, your brief to me today was that you wanted me to bring in some radical queer perspectives on
that. And then I use that word.
There we go.
Right, okay. Well, with that brief, Jax, what was your overall impression?
It was good. It was good. It was lovely to be on a panel with other queer and trans disabled people and to be taking up space at the Pride Centre and to have the stage be wheelchair accessible because it's often without a ramp.
Yes.
It was great to be able to wheel on there with my wheelchair today and be on stage.
And can I see clarification? Mm. You mentioned, I believe, that often it's without a ramp, even when they know you're going to be a panellist.
Well, yeah, it's a big hoo-ha for them, the staff members, to get the ramp set up and whatever. I think that, you know, access should be provided regardless of whether, you know, you have someone with that particular access requirement needing it. It should be visible and part of the staging so that anyone who might want to access the stage can get on there and you don't need to, you know, book it in advance and do all this stuff behind the scenes to get a ramp happening. But sadly, it's not always there, so it's good to have it there today and to bring that up as part of the conversation, I guess.
It's interesting, though. So I'll reflect on my experiences in using risk management frameworks in subverting them in a way to ensure a degree of accessibility and inclusivity within various workplaces that I've been responsible for. And one element of that is it's a bit like PPE, personal protective equipment. Organisations relying on personal protective equipment to protect someone from a hazard they could actually design out. And I think this is very similar, that they could design out the inaccessibility of the stage rather than having to use a special piece of equipment.
Retrofitting, often disability access is retrofitted after the thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to having universal access as a kind of planned thing.
Yes.
But it was great to be here. I feel like we didn't touch on the more racy topics of sex and sexuality around people with disabilities and how often our sexuality is deemed to be non-existent by service supports organisations and the broader society.
Well, we should talk about it further on the program at some point.
Yes. We didn't kind of touch on those kind of intimate and political spaces of our sexuality and our sex lives, and particularly what that means for trans and gender diverse people.
Yes.
We kind of stayed more on the kind of systemic level things, which are things that we need to talk about and advocate for. A lot of my initial activism as a young person was very much about, you know, the personal is political, and very much about sexuality and sexuality rights and finding lovers and having hot sex.
Yes. something I could learn a bit about.
Yeah.
Maddie lives too much in her head.
Although I have to say, you know, as someone who transitioned later in life and took a while to be able to feel comfortable and confident to come out as a trans person.
Yeah.
A lot of my mantras as a young disabled person were, you know, we have to feel proud and love our bodies. And as a trans person living with gender dysphoria and sometimes finding my physical body really hard to accept and to navigate in an intimate space, I now realise that some of those messagings that I had and that I was perpetuating as a young disabled person were pretty simplistic and were hiding a lot of how I was actually feeling.
Yeah, so a queer sexuality and gender queer perspective.
Yeah, and I wasn't really addressing how I felt about my gender stuff at all. And yeah, now that I'm navigating life and intimacy as an out trans person, I realise, you know, that it is a lot more complex than we should all just feel amazing and work towards loving ourselves as we are.
So as a trans sexy beast, you now have a lot that you can offer in terms of wisdom in this area.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been in a monogamous relationship with my partner for almost 12 years.
So doesn't stop you from being a sexy beast.
I know, but we've got two kids, so often I'm balancing the parenting with the and being exhausted with the want to be a sexy beast.
Well, there are things to learn there in itself.
Yeah, thanks, Madison.
That is definitely going on air. I just found it, I know that you've worked in the areas of like setting up organisations.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get a bit serious now about, you know, the nature or the non-intersectionality nature of funding arrangements. It seems to me that an organisation like Inclusive Rainbow Voices might have had difficulty in a funding universe where you get funding for people with disability, you get funding for queer people. Do you necessarily find it any easier or any harder to get funding for Inclusive Rainbow Voices? Is that a thing?
Yeah, look, I think it, part of the advocacy that Margarita Coppolino, one of the founding members of IRV, did, and one of the strengths she has as an advocate, is being able to really know who's in government in the various different departments. And yes, she had lots of conversations across a number of years before even IRV started about how to get the organisation to happen and where she might seek different fundings from.
Yes.
And how to get the Office for Disability, for example, and the Office for LGBTIQA+, to actually provide, you know, their own separate little buckets of funding, seed funding, to get the organisation happening, to kind of bring together the intersectionality of those two communities, for example.
Yeah.
But it is you're quite right. Like, today's event was, I believe, funded by the LGBTIQA+ commissioner and his office. And it is quite hard to get that funding that speaks to both the disability and LGBTIQ+ communities.
Yes.
There are some, like in the NDIS space, there's some linkages and capacity building funding that's LGBTIQ+ disability specific, and there's been a number of grants across the years that have, you know, seek to build resources and capacity by providing information and social connections to people. But it's very limited in terms of being able to get a grant that speaks specifically to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So almost like the more granular the intersection, the more likely you're going to have difficulty.
Yeah.
No, that's a real
and
worry.
And getting ongoing funding is hard. Like, I'm no longer on the board of IRV. As I said, I stepped back because I had another kid and I wanted to, you know, focus on parenting, but also I had to focus on bringing money in for the family, and I was volunteering at IRV. And so sadly, I had to step away. But my understanding is it's been quite hard to get the level of ongoing funding that will enable the staff pool to grow. Like, it's only 1.5 people that work at IRV doing all the things they're doing. So to have that kind of ongoing funding, that at the core funding that enables an organisation to run and cover all its running costs,
yes,
as well as building a staff base,
yes,
is quite a challenge, because, you know, governments want to fund you for a period of a couple of years to do a particular output, and then they say, well, you know, you produce these resources, do this particular project, but then what happens to the actual running of an organisation?
Where's the ongoing sustainability, the continuity?
Yeah.
And part of that, I think, is also this tendency for funding bodies to believe that the best they can do is provide a year or 2 years of funding.
Yeah.
And often, you know, the race is only half won by the time the funding cuts out.
And I'd say, like, the other complexity for Inclusive Rainbow Voices and organisations working at this intersection is, how do we build and create organisations that hold at their core, you know, disability justice principles of,
yes,
of being able to rest when you need to rest, of having flexible working conditions, of having disability-based leave so that if you need to take leave because you're burnt out or you've got health issues or whatever, your organisation pays for that and covers some of that. Like, we have transition leave now in some progressive organisations, which is lovely, but it'd be really lovely to see organisations actually have disability-based leave for those of us who, you know, have health conditions and other things that impact our capacity to do full-time work.
Yeah, I know you're busy, and including today, so I appreciate your time. Just one last thing.
Yeah.
It's not a question, actually. I just want to share with you my deep appreciation. there has, and this is actually a little interpersonal, so I hope you don't mind the nature of it, but I remember I was here in this very room at the Vic Pride Centre at something, it was a queer event that was talking about the importance of basically self-advocacy and group advocacy in a different area. And I made a comment, and I just basically shared an analogy where somebody came to me and warned me that I was being filmed by somebody. And you know, in a public area, and they were laughing at me, but they'd gone. So the thing is that, you know, I then said to that person, look, don't worry about it. Thank you very much for letting me know. But I'm afraid that sort of stuff happens all the time. Sometimes you just got to ignore this stuff, don't you? And then one of the people on the panel actually tried to tell me that, you know, and this is no aspersion towards them, but I think it is a reflective moment, tried to share with me the notion that maybe I could have used this as a learning moment. And you just came straight out in a very tactful way and said, look, you know, sometimes, with all due respect, we just don't have the energy for that. And I think this is one of the strong contributions that you've made to a lot of these debates, reflecting on the extent to which it's just hard enough being queer. I mean, I'm a person with disability too, so queer with disability, doing your best to be out there, living your own life, and maybe doing a little bit of advocacy work, but constantly being expected to be on.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the things in the last 5 years or so that I've really learnt to be better at for myself.
Yes.
Is that I don't expect myself to be constantly on anymore. Like, when I'm on stage and I do an event like this, yes, I'm being paid to, and I prepare and I think about it and I'm doing that advocacy work and I'm making the choice to step into that role, right?
Yes.
But when I'm at the park with my kids and someone comes up and asks a really intrusive question about why I'm in a wheelchair and that, you know, I'm never going to have an interaction with that person ever again.
No.
I no longer think it's my job to be that nice teachable moment.
No.
Sometimes I don't respond at all. Sometimes I respond in a really humorous way that's just humor for me.
Yes.
Sometimes I leave that interaction. I give myself the right to be a full complex human being in that moment and to be able to not just be a one-dimensional teaching moment for that person.
Yes, and indeed.
And I never used to put down the mantle of being in this educational role, and now I'm like, I have to because I can't do it for the rest of my life.
No, it's part of self-care.
Yeah.
It can't do the important work either if you're tiring yourself doing that never-ending low-level stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And teachable moment, as it happens, was the phrase used by the person. So,
Yeah.
Well, firstly, as I said, you know, thanks for, you know, that immediate moment at the time. And thanks for being one of those few voices that are really pushing that out there as part of the discourse.
No worries. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jax. I'll hope to see you again.
You sure will. Wonder what's happening with you
then. All right. So, that was Jax. And I just thought, you know, on the notion of self-care, ability to take a step back, before we move on to listening to Sky, I'll just share a few bullet points that I took down while listening to the many voices on the panel of this LGBTI inclusive voices event. So, part of what was discussed was that queer people and queer people and people with disability are both targets at the moment in the US, and that even though we can bang on about the US and sometimes it becomes a bit mindless, after all we live in Australia, it does have implications across Australia as well, and people are starting to experience those. Also, that just after the work of everyday life, self-care actually can include just avoiding the news. Another point that was raised, the connection with friends, community, reading good books, listening to good advocates are all self-care and sustaining practices, as opposed to, for instance, watching the news and the never-ending stream of negativity. Conversely, connecting online proves a complex place for everyone, but that this is certainly no exception for those who are with disability and queer. And just when you might want to relax by, as many people do, going online, you know, engaging in social media, that in itself can then become a source of exhaustion and even burnout. And basically, what we perhaps need to do is to regenerate ourselves by staying connected, by actually being IRL connected, you know, or even through the internet, doing it more directly rather than relying on social media. So connecting directly with people online and in real life and advocating together or just hanging out. So this is the self-care places. This is a very important and powerful message, I think. It was discussed how self-care places emphasis on individual responsibility. And that is to say that it seems to purposefully ignore the systemic oppression on many people. And instead of recognizing that and talking in terms of how perhaps through working together and advocating and being activists together, instead we're just offered this capitalistic, consumption-focused supposed set of solutions, you know, bath bombs and the like. And yes, another element here is that, you know, we're just, and I touched on this in the discussion with Jax, this notion we're always expected to be on. And I heard a very interesting idea today at this particular forum about the right to cancel. That is like to assert control on what version of you goes out in public. That is to say, to feel free to say, well, yes, I understand that I did say I would attend something, but unfortunately, the answer is now no. You know, and it is part of breaking the stigma that is associated with not being equipped for something that was previously planned. And, you know, that this is something that's important within the queer people with disability community, but I think also just generally, you know, there's so much expectation for punctuality and consistency, like our lives are a project rather than a life. And I just found that it was really empowering idea that I'm going to think more about myself, about the right to cancel. You know, where does the responsibility for being reliable end and the responsibility to take care of yourself start? I don't think there's an absolute in either direction. We all want to be responsible towards each other, but we also need to take care of each other. So now we'll hear from Skye. Welcome to 3CR. You're with Madison Moffat, and I'm with the fantastic Skye, who I actually know through a few peer education sessions and also online via the Novus peer support group.
Yes, hello. Hello, Madison.
Yeah, so how's it been going?
Oh, it's been resonating so much with the event today.
Yeah.
And just the burnout bits. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Burning out.
it's a real it's a real issue at the moment. So to explain for the listeners, we're actually at the Inclusive Rainbow Voices celebration for LGBTIQA+ persons with disability this morning. And lo and behold, I saw my friend Skye on the opposite side of the audience.
There you go.
So I thought, there's...
I'm glad you saw me and I didn't see you, so...
No, that's right.
You came over.
Which is a rather unfair advantage on my point, because it meant I could accost you with my microphone.
You could. And I've got my guide dog, Grant, here too, so he doesn't talk much, so I'm just putting him out in there, in the mix.
Well, I'll tell you what... Grant and I have obviously got get on, because as soon as I started standing and talking to you, I got a lovely lick on the shins.
Oh, did you? Okay, fair enough.
Just a lovely, lovely boy. And always a bit of a, almost I'd say a mascot to the the face-to-face peer stuff we do.
Oh, yes, exactly. Everyone loves him.
Everybody.
And so, yeah, good, great. I remember the session that we did last year in October.
Yeah.
At... where was it? The
Abbotsford and Thorn Harbour Health.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, those sessions were really great.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you're at the last one. We missed you. So.
Oh.
So I might have to harass you. Yeah, that's right. Accost you further. Yes.
Accost me further.
<You're>, consider yourself accostable.
Good.
So, yeah. So, how did you find this particular event?
I found it very enlightening, because I've thought about this kind of stuff for a long time, and I haven't really gotten involved with stuff.
Yeah.
And it's something I needed 30 years ago. I think I said it in the presentations that were today.
Yeah.
That I needed this when I was 16, and I did not have that.
Yes.
And I don't know, it's just amazing that it's come full circle, and I can actually say that I did need that when I was 16. So I hope that IRV reach out to places like Minus 18 that I was talking about, and that, you know, for young people coming out, it's so important to be able to feel that you've got your own community. And if you don't have that, it's like, I still struggle with it now.
Yeah.
Living where I live, I live in Melbourne, but it's still like I feel scared to go out my front door in a dress. And
yes,
like, I shouldn't feel that way, but I do, and that's really triggering for me to do that.
And someone with visual impairment, does that exacerbate that feeling for
you?
I
think so, yeah. Because I can't see how people judge me, and I know that they shouldn't judge me, they should just accept me, but
no,
I live in a very multicultural area, and, you know, people don't like dogs, for example, in you know, Asian communities, and if they don't like the dog, then what are they going to think about me? It's very triggering, and I find that really difficult.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a dimension all on its own, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that part of what the panel had to say about the importance of working together, I think, you know, your question very much tied into that.
Mm.
You know, that... And I think this is one of the things that was raised was that it's very difficult to get funding because it's actually a non-inclusive process to get funding for
and
stuff.
And it's so siloed as well. Like, you know, you might get funding for one disability or not, or another disability, or one part of the queer community or not.
Yes.
So it's really challenging, I think, for everybody, and everyone always talks about recurrent funding.
Yes, well, that's right. You get funding for 12 months for something,
and then it's gone.
And it's gone almost because you've had your turn. It's like we've only just started getting results.
Yeah, exactly. And this notion of crypt time, I'd heard it once before.
Ah, yes, yes.
I love that term, crypt time. I want to read more about it and see what it's all about.
It reminds me of the idea of queer time, which I know some people use now more as a joke or a meme, but I know that queer time also had a more serious original intent.
Did it?
Where they talked about, when people were talking about queer time, they were talking about time that wasn't linear.
So
queer experiences include accepting and acknowledging non-linear narratives and non-linear senses of time, which I think is, you know, pretty powerful.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Because just coming out, like, I've had to really think about whether I fit into the trans community, and I feel like I do, but another ways I don't as well. I don't know. I find that really challenging. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds to me, if I may say so, and just sort of observing from the outside, you are queer in your befittedness of the trans community.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you don't fit perfectly in your mind to the trans community. Well, that just sounds like a queer way of fitting in, which makes it, you know, even more valid. More valid.
Exactly. And just, you know, name changes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, it's discovery, though.
Yeah, it's discovering, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be exceedingly unqueer of someone to expect you to have a nice, neat, packaged experience of your trans discovery. Or maybe your discovery that you're not trans at some point, who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what it is? And it's my journey, and it's not anyone else's journey, and it doesn't have to end up at a certain point. And if it does end up at whatever point it ends up at, is my journey. So
Exactly. Yeah, so the sky. Just always something really interesting to say. A great advocate and came forward with one of the more thought-provoking questions at the inclusive Rainbow Voices event. So, this has been Queering the Air, broadcast on 3CR Radical Radio, on 855 on your AM radio dial, and digitally streamed on 3cr.org.au/streaming. I wish Atlas and Remy the best of health. Rest up, my good peoples, and hopefully we'll see Atlas next week on Queering the Air. Now, I'm going to be leaving you with a track that has been very recently released by Wild at Heart Records. Wild at Heart Records is part of the Wild at Heart Project, which is a northern project, northern Melbourne, northern Nam project that assists artists and creative types with disability to realise their creative dream, their creative vision. And Tsunami's creative vision includes sharing stories through song. And this is one such output from Tsunami. It's just been recently released. It's a lovely track called Over the Moon for You. Over the Moon for You by Tsunami. Next up, Salaam Radio Show. As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording.